So if music be the food of love, play on. Now, you know that we're always delving more and more now into the human being, not just the human doing. So my guest today, very special, has had three top 10 songs in the UK charts, specializes in the club music genre, but might not be the person you think would be doing so well within the music industry and thriving, because that's all about us exploring now who's the human being behind the human doing. You don't want to miss this particular episode where I've got the wonderful Lady Indira with me. Come back to me just after this break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. It's a huge welcome, Indira, for coming into the studio. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I've been excited for you to come into the studio and just chat about you and about your story.
I can talk about myself forever. Don't worry.
And when
I'm not vain or anything.
Well, we should say that we know each other anyway, and I know your husband as well. And I've had the chance to spend time with you both, and your husband and I play a lot of tennis. And in that, I started to discover your background.
Yeah, that's right.
And I introduced it as someone who's got three top 10 songs in the UK charts, specifically in the club music genre. So as people were listening to that, they must have thought, I wonder. And then they may not
have
expected.
Who's this old bag sitting behind the microphone?
Let no one say that. But that's what I mean in relation to breaking the mold, doing things unexpectedly. How did you get to this sector? How did you end up doing this?
I think it was around 50. I was around 52 when my surrogate son, who worked on the farm where I live, is a drummer, and he started bringing very random musicians in who needed jobs and money on hand.
Yeah,
and it just became like a halfway house for all of them to just live, because there were extra rooms in the house next door.
Yep.
And so there was they'd come, and then it was breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then they'd say goodnight, Mum, and go to respective rooms in the other house. And soon they all started calling me Mum, and they were all musicians. And one of them was doing a gig, and he couldn't find, I think the person who was supposed to work with him couldn't make it for the gig. And he asked me, he said, will you cover for her? And I said, I can't. I mean, I help you with doing when he was singing, he'd say, can you do this and can you do that? And the harmonies, and that was fine. And I have a recording studio. Tom has a recording studio in the farm, my surrogate son. So he said, well, it's just the same thing, except you just have to stand on stage and sing, you know, all the songs you knew when you were growing up. So it was, you know, Creedence Clearwater Revival and Tina Turner, all the rest. I said,
is such a shame. So,
and it was odd. So, but the first gig was fine because he gave me less of the solos, more of the harmonies.
Right.
And then things went a bit awry because I almost gave up on this whole thing, because he was asked to do a pub somewhere with the Bee Gees, and none of the Bee Gees turned up, cover tribute thing.
Yeah.
But it was already organized, so I had to dress up as Maurice. And you can't tell, but it was not a good evening for me, because I had to pretend to be a man through the whole evening. And
it's about as bizarre as you can make it, isn't it?
It was. And as I did not know that it was quite a rough place in Edgware. And the next thing I knew is there were a lot of people in the front going, telling him, we hate you, but we like her. So after that, I started covering a few gigs with him to do duets. And I started, one day I was decided to record covers. And when I was talking to a very well-known producer and who won a Brit Award, etc., and he said, why don't you write your own lyrics? Even if you put one word in something, it still becomes yours.
Yes.
And I wrote an entire album in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I recorded the whole thing. And I realized that now I'm in August, I'm going to be 65. And I realized my real strength was singing my lyrics because I feel them.
Yes.
And I also tend to write in situations. When Mum died, 05/19 on the 18th of May in 2013, I came out of the room when she passed away, and I was with her till the last. And
right.
I came out and I was sitting there waiting for them to sign the certificates, etc. Rajiv and I were in Bangalore, and I wrote a song called Mother Indira, and it was literally heartfelt, and it's actually I couldn't sing it for months because I just couldn't. Actually, for 2 years, I could not sing that song because it brought up everything.
Right.
Then when I started drinking after Mum died, and I didn't drink till then. And when I did have a problem for about 5 years, and I went into rehab and got out of that. But during that time, I wrote songs like Drowning in My Wine. That's how I spend my time, just drowning in my wine. Things like that. And I realized that all my songs were depending on my mood.
Yes.
And
from a deep personal place.
Yeah. And when I was, if I was happy, it would be good. And one day I was sitting watching Tommy, my son, mowing the lawn, and I thought, oh, there are lots of weeds there. And I wrote a song called Weed, and it was about the other woman. I'm not your flower, I'm your weed. And I just wrote it sitting there. So it was always about something that came to me at odd times.
Right.
So I think lyrics are my strength. I always believed it. And then I realized I wasn't going to sell 80s, I think 70s, I think 80s. And I think lyrics were very good there at that time. But I didn't think I was going to sell music in that way. So I made even my song Shrink was about my psychiatrist who passed away. My doctor who passed away, was more like a psychiatrist to me.
Yeah, we're going to come on to that particular song.
I wrote Shrink. And then I realized that it had to be, I had to change my way of working.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working with young musicians, and they'd give me music, and they, you know, who were writing for Korean pop and Japanese pop and all this. And I said, okay, so I did, I think a year with one of them who's very successful, and he'd say, dum da dum da dum 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 da dum da dum. And then I'd have to write lyrics to that. And
okay.
Then the next one, he'd go, dum da dum da dum, and I'd write lyrics. And we did a whole year of that, where I just learned how to fit in lyrics into club beats. But then I also had to learn how to rap. Because most club music has a rap section in it.
Am I right in thinking, though, that this is all in some ways come about by chance?
Yeah,
with
yeah,
you
yeah,
in your
totally,
50s,
totally.
Because
this was, this
people
was
just
when
started
I crossed
coming
60,
into your
actually.
Life.
This was when I crossed 60 that the club music hit.
Right.
And hit really well because this guy was really well known, and he was, I just love working with her. I want to work with her because I'm not saying I'm great. I learn very quick. And I think it's funny because I had to write songs on things I didn't know about. And so I'd Google street talk. And
I love it. Research.
And then I can't find my green, you know, my notes. I'm sorry, it sounds so ridiculous, but I started picking up street talk from just Googling it.
Yep.
And what is street talk for money, what's street talk for this, what's street talk for heroin, and, you know, anything, everything. I know it sounds absolutely mental, but I started thinking that way. Now, I'm addicted to something called the Crime Channel, and a lot of it is about, all of it is about crime, but a lot of it is about, crime is usually stimulated by money and money for drugs or whatever, or money.
Yeah, acquisitive passion, crime.
You know, things like that, love. But it comes about due to that. And I started listening very carefully when I was watching the Crime Channel to, say, 48 Hours in Utah. And there'd be a very, when they interview each other, I mean, when they interview the guy in the police stations,
yes,
and stuff like that,
right.
Interrogate, should I say, they'd use a certain way of talking, yo.
So you picked up on the language or the slang,
so I had
or
to,
the
I had
the
to learn how to talk in those different ways, and I learned to distinguish different, even American, mainly American jargon, and I could tell from where, by the end of about a year, I could tell from where they were coming from, you
right.
know, which regions
your,
and
back
stuff
to your
like
research.
That. But it was just literally having to learn a whole new way of thinking. So then my next two songs came from there.
And I'm going to come into the songs because they're fascinating in the lyrics and where they've come from. They've come from a very deep personal place. I've got to ask a question because many people will either know the music industry or not, or have a perception of the music industry in relation to, in some ways, certain people must fit into certain categories or looks or backgrounds. So how did you feel, as you say, as a female Indian, someone who hadn't come into songwriting between 50s and 60s, how did you feel within the club scene in relation to fitting in or meeting the need? Or were you at that point yourself incredibly confident about what you could do differently?
I think when I did perform in clubs a couple of times, like in Ibiza and here at Pasha in London, I was actually very happy that people were they put me in a cage and made me sing in a cage and in these really shoes like that. And,
see, not many people
like
tell me this kind of thing, right?
Okay,
this
and,
is their experience.
And dress up there and all the rest of it. And when I was singing, they'd all sing the lyrics. And I was just so excited they knew the song. And I just focused. And another thing I do is if I don't do gigs anymore, but if I did do anything, like I sang at Trafalgar Square for the mayor, at that time was Boris, I just focus on the tops of their heads.
Right.
And I sing to that.
Okay.
But so I don't actually, because you always, the lights are in your face, so you don't really see the audience. But it's very important to engage with them, even though you can't see them. You engage with them because the front row, the second row, it's very important to engage with your audience. So they think, it's like, you know, when I think a long time ago I listened, there was a song about, you know, a singer who you think the words are all for you, but they're not for you. They just, because when you're in a sad mood, you listen to sad mood. You've been jilted, you listen to jilted music. And
music
when you're
is
happy,
very emotion-based, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so if it's like, you know, you take their words and you make it like, you know, you take their songs and make it your life.
Yeah.
Sad songs say so much. And you sort of, I realize that if you contact with the audience, it's really important.
That human connection.
Yeah. So when I started doing club music, I've got one funny story for you that you'd like. I was told to do an underground club, which was...
I'm not even sure I know what that is. Is that like...
But. So in the Asian culture, there is a lot of there's a lot of stigma attached to LGBTQ and coming out and all the rest of it.
Yep.
And so a lot of them meet in underground clubs.
Right.
And many of them are actually married, arranged marriages, so on and so forth.
Right.
So they don't want to be seen, known, or anything. So I was told by my promoter at that time that we're going to do an underground club, and it's club music. You're going to be singing your song, Take Me, Make Me. You're going to do Kama Sutra. You're going to do whatever the songs were. And that's what you're going to do. So I had Paul, who's the dentist you've met, who lives next door to me. He dressed as my valet in a tuxedo. My son, who's built like a tank because he's a boxer, he was my my bouncer, my bodyguard.
Right.
And
this is your entourage.
Yeah, and a guy who's a guy called Ivan, who was a singer, who's very girly looking but very pretty Brazilian boy.
Yeah,
was my slave.
Right.
And I wore I wore a long coat, and he was on a lead with a collar, and he walked around with me, and I had no eye contact all evening with any of the people in the room.
Right.
Although I knew I was being stared at, and
well, in many ways, you're putting on a show.
Of course. And then all evening, I just sat there with a stoic expression and didn't say a word to anybody. And I'd turn, look at my valet and say something, or look at my bodyguard and say something, but no eye contact with anyone else.
Right.
And then when I went on the stage, I got so caught up with the adrenaline. I had a very short leather skirt on and kinky boots, all the rest of it. And I had this red bra on and a lacy top on. I don't know what happened, and I ripped my shirt off, and I said, take me, make me, show this girl some fun. And the audience was like, okay, what just happened?
Did you feel at that point you were slightly possessed?
It was really funny because they were clawing onto the stage, and, you know, it was absolutely really fun.
Where's that come from then? Because I know what you're like in real life. You're very warm, loving, homely. House is very accepting to so many people. Where's this coming from?
I don't know, but the lyrics of that song are pretty bad, you know. So, I mean, they're not pretty bad. It's, you know, it's about a girl who gets, who's working, and she doesn't have time for a partner, and it's like, you know, she goes behind a club, behind the bar.
Right.
Go get your keys, baby, get
Where's
in my
this
car.
All coming
that kind
from,
of
though?
I don't know. I've got a second really weird personality who's living in this side of my brain. Take out the cuffs, take out the chains, you know, don't hold back, don't pull those reins, kind of thing. And those are the lyrics. And so.
It's normal. The alter ego.
Yeah. And Ivan was on this lead and with a collar and little leather hot pants on. And I suddenly said, I had this whip in my hand, and I said, who wants to whip the slave, you know? And I had all these people queuing up to come on the stage. And I kid you not, this is a true story. No one could make this up. But it was fantastic. It was funny because you understand your audience because you understand that they can't express themselves either. My husband always jokes with me, and he says, when you leave the house, you go out in these really sexy clothes, as Indira, and then you come home, and my other name is Pratima. And he says, and 10 minutes after you come home, you come out of the bathroom in your pajamas, and I always get Pratima.
I'll have to ask you about that next time we're playing tennis. Let's make no mistakes. We're not just talking about your work in an underground club. It went mainstream. We're talking about now A-list DJs playing this on massive stages, 3 top 10 songs in the UK charts.
That's right.
Well, how did that happen?
I don't know. I just wrote the songs. I just sang them, recorded them, and I let it go out there. And the next thing I knew, my producers
theory,
were telling
way.
Me that you're in the top 20. And I like all ex-tennis players who've looked at the draw, I've said, oh, well, I'm not seeded yet. That means I'm not in the top 8. And then when I did get into the top 5, I said, yeah, but I didn't win, did I? You know, so that was...
We've got to explain that tennis reference because you used to play tennis, right?
Yeah,
just tell everyone.
I used to play on the tennis circuit with my husband. We were mixed doubles partners on the tennis circuit in India. Then we played in Holland together as well. And I was 5 in India. He was always number 1. So, you know, I'm not going to go there because he's always good at everything.
And he's still very good. He's still
he's
ranked globally.
Yeah,
so
I think he is.
And good shout out.
Too, yeah. So he's really lovely. And I just gave him a tennis court for his 60th birthday, but it was ready only after lockdown.
Which I played on.
Yes, which you played on. And it's a good surface, isn't it?
No, it is. It is really wonderful. So it went mainstream. And as I say, you know, 3 top 10 songs. I think I have a theory on this. And a lot of what I talk about, when we talk about leading self, leading others, leading an organization, whatever it might be, it's about the human being. The human doing is important, but what's driving the human doing something? So what's driving you in your 50s and in your 60s to have these experiences, which are just wonderful? You've got to write a book as well. And what is the connection with people? And so I'm going to ask James just to put up on the screen Shrink. Now, you wrote Shrink. It came out in 2011.
That's
right. About 2011.
But I redid it over and over.
And I think we're going to pop it on the screen here. And people will see this, that these are the lyrics as well. And I'll put the link in so that you can actually listen to it as well. So I'm on the brink. I can't go on. We see some more of the lyrics. I need a shrink. And you said this was in relation to your therapist who unfortunately passed away. And the lyrics are, they're very powerful because they're very personal. Just help us understand, where was this song coming from? Because this was a top 10 hit.
Yeah.
Soon played in all the clubs internationally.
I suffered from clinical depression from when I was in my teens.
Right.
And I didn't, I was in India and I didn't really recognize it. And it came from being abused by a relative,
right,
and not accepting it and, you know, we subdue all these things. And in India, it was totally not acceptable. And even when I came to my mom and said, he's a bit too affectionate with me, mom, you know, she said, oh, don't be silly. He doesn't have a daughter. He loves you so much.
Right.
But then it escalated really badly. And I started getting very suicidal thoughts. And I was only a teenager. And then when I got married and my husband was, we eloped when I was 24, he was 21. And he was really busy trying to build a life for us. And the loneliness was getting to me. And I fell back again into depression.
Right.
And I think I came to England years later. And when I told my parents, it's very much like the old school. I said, you know, I'm sad all the time. I have bad thoughts. And go to the temple and pray. You don't pray enough.
Right.
That's the problem with this generation. And I said, no, I don't think it's about that. I have a problem. With no disrespect to my parents, it was another, doctors just want to make money. And I said, okay, so let it go. Then later when I came
here. Just a different mindset, wasn't it?
Yeah. So when I came here, Rajiv said, you need to see someone. Also, I left India behind. I left my friends behind, my job. And I came into this place, couldn't work for 4 years legally, so I couldn't work at all. And then I was used to staff in the house. I didn't know how to run a house on my own. I didn't have any friends.
It was a complete cultural lifestyle
change. Yeah, and I didn't have
any
friends. I used to travel a lot, but it's different when you're traveling and staying in nice hotels and blah, 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 to living day to day. And so I slumped very badly, and I started seeing a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And during the lockdown post, you know, we're going 20 years on. During the lockdown, the mental health issue became huge. And
for so many as
and
well.
And my Tommy, my son again, was working with the NHS as a therapist and referring therapists and so on and so
right.
forth. And he has a website called Musicians Against Depression, MAD. And I started reading more and more into his things, and I was trying to help him because I'd been there and he'd been there. So I decided during lockdown that I was going to relaunch Shrink, but it had to go out to the generation now that's experiencing it, because there were high suicides among younger people.
Post-pandemic.
And there was also this obsession with gaming and all sorts of things. And that really was coming from a lack of stimulation to the brain, to the outdoors, to everything you wanted to do. And so I relaunched Shrink. And for me, every word is very important. You know, I need a big soft pillow and a padded cell because I'm a real live wire in this living
hell.
Did
you change any of the lyrics when you relaunched it?
No, I didn't.
Right.
I need a shrink and I need a drink because I'm just recovering from alcoholism as well.
Right.
So, I went from not drinking at all to drinking a bottle of wine in the evenings, which some people may not think is a lot, but when you're on antidepressants, it's like drinking 5 bottles of wine.
Right.
And it just triggered, not me. And when I came out of rehab, I went to Castle Craig in Scotland to rehab for a month. And on the third day, it was actually just before my wedding anniversary. And I went in on the 6th of Jan, and Rajiv kept asking me, he said, "Are you sure you want to go? Don't you want to go after the 9th? And I said, "No, I'll never go then." And I said I'd go after New Year, I'm going. And on the doorstep of Castle Craig, my father was in hospital at that point, and I'd lost my mum already. And he said, "Your dad's not doing well. Your sister said to inform you that maybe you need to go back." And I said, "No, what good am I going to be if I just start drinking over there?"
And you had to look after yourself
first. I said, I would just be in the way of everybody. And this is not about me. This is about Dad now over there. So I went into Castle Craig. And sadly, on the 9th, my anniversary, early in the morning, my father passed away.
Right.
It's a big storm. And I said, "Dad, you're going out with a bang." And he died that morning. And so I always think that that's one side I have to respect, is the fact that we have to give ourselves this strength, and anyone out there who's battling with any form of addiction, it can be anything at all, the biggest favor you will do to yourself and more to yourself first, and then to all the people you really love and really, really don't want to ever let down in life, is get help. Because we know you can do it on your own, you can do it on your own, but the chances of success are better if you get professional help and then take it from there. Then you're on your own and you can do it. But honestly, after the pandemic, I've heard such terrible stories about anything and everything, and I have a chance today to actually reach out to people and say, you know, just get help if you can.
I'm going to link this to an episode I did a couple of weeks ago, actually. I was in Montenegro and I spoke to Dr. Ferran Rose, who was a psychiatrist. And she taught me something very powerful, which comes back to me now. She talked about, and I think it's such a theme for leaders at the moment, people are struggling with just trying to make sure that they're okay, or that people are around them, their needs are being met, or they're thriving, or they're providing, whatever it might be. And she talked to me about vulnerability and helped me understand vulnerability as the ability for an individual to really understand his or her needs, but also to have the confidence to ask other people for help with those needs.
That's a tough one.
And that is a tough one. And I hope that resonates with people who are listening and watching this. And, you know, I want to thank you for being so vulnerable and open. But I also think it's so necessary. And for me, it also validates the direction of travel for this podcast, because I've been talking a lot about human-centered leadership, the ability of anyone who is leading in any way, shape, or form to really now think about and dial into their human-centered capabilities above and beyond their expertise or capabilities.
But you know, I think one of the things that's easy is when you get older. When you're younger, you are consumed by your self-image. You're consumed by... I'd walk into a place when I was in my 20s.
Social media doesn't help the youngsters now.
No,
right?
And I'd walk into a party when I was in my 20s, and I'd look around like, "You lucky guys, I'm here," you know, that kind of attitude. And when you grow up, which is what you have to do, you can accept who you are and not have to live... behind something else. One of my lyrics were, "I hide behind a mask all day. I feel so much, but I can't say. A painted face no man can read. I'm not a flower, I'm just a weed." And I think you can't hide yourself. When you accept who you are, you don't mind opening yourself up. I don't mind opening myself up to anybody. And on that note, I was thinking when I started watching this crime channel, which I'm so obsessed with, I noticed how depression can be linked to addictions, obviously, and past experiences. And the song of mine that actually did the best, is Doing All Right, is about a young girl whose parents split up, and then she goes to the to her mom's, and she doesn't get on with the father, the new father, and then she goes into drinking. I started drinking before I could walk, kind of thing, you know, and then leads into drugs, and then from drugs I beg, steal or borrow, even take a life, because as the addictions got heavier, the need became so desperate, and in the end she takes a life. Okay, it's very extreme, but now she's in jail and she's on death row, and she says that waiting for the bell to ring, but it's waiting for that bell, but it's got to be better than living in hell. And how she was a prisoner of her own brain.
And what is this doing for you, the writing music like this? What is it doing?
It's a catharsis, isn't
okay.
it? It really
an
is.
Outlet.
It gets you... And it's sort of... I want to sometimes look at someone and say, you don't understand. You can do this now. You won't have to go through what others go through. You know, you don't have to do it if you look after yourself now. And I know of a little kid who's, you know, throwing everything in their life away to follow a path that really is very in at the moment with all the social media and all the gaming and all the rest of it. And I feel like saying, God, I wish I had a second chance to go through all my life again, and I know for sure how many different things I would do, my goodness me, differently. And I would not for a minute I now feel like I want it's like anything else. When you write something, when I write a song, roughly sitting on my bed, I squiggle, and then I rewrite until I get it feeling right. And I think I want to do that with my life, and I don't have that chance. You know, I would love to rewrite my whole life. But I do know I'm a product of all my mess-ups as well as products of all the good things that have happened.
Well, you've never been shied away from talking about mental health and the challenges you've been through, and everyone has gone through some form of challenge. And I think there's a real inspirational story here, isn't there? Because people will look at you or meet you for the first time and will not think that you got 3 top 10 songs in the club charts.
The way to do it is detach. Detachment is the way forward.
But there's something else there going on, isn't there? You've, in some ways, that success has come from you finding an outlet.
Yeah,
a healthy outlet for songwriting, and in some ways, being someone else for a little bit of time.
And
you know what? Nothing wrong with that.
Them, and reaching out to the people who want to listen to this, because they need to listen to this. And also, I think it's more... It's like when a kid jumps on the sofa and you say, you know, or the bed, and you say, you're going to fall. You're going to break your head, you know. But they're not going to listen till they actually fall. And I think, for me, it's my way of saying... Damn, I've gone and messed up again, kind of thing, you know. But I think there is a way forward in every situation, whether it's this or not. And there's one message I do want to say is the warning signs when you're young is when your fantasy is death rather than life, you've got an issue.
And that's heartbreaking to almost hear, let alone.
Yeah, when you're instead of thinking of yourself as... you know, looking at, you know, in my day, putting posters up of, pop stars and people in sport. You know, when your fantasy at night is actually watching yourself lying dead 10 stories down, then you know you've got an issue. You have a very serious issue, and it has to be dealt with.
Now, this is for me something that's very close to home. You know, I've recorded an episode with my daughter, and it's just called One Word, Vulnerable, and it hasn't been released yet, and it's something that will be, but in some ways she has to be at peace with it. And she was amazing in the studio, and it was really hard. How we both didn't end up in complete tears, I've got no idea. So I think that's what is fueling my now focus on the human being, not just the human doing, because it's so easy to see the veneer, to see you on stage, to see you in real life, to see, and let's also say, when you're at home, you're very family oriented, and you have an open house, and you've got 7 rescue dogs, and you've got loads of animals on the farm, and there's this aura of care. But tell me how is it that you care for others and animals, but you struggled with caring for yourself when you were growing up?
I think when I was growing up, my grandparents had started an institution in the southern part of India for widows who had nowhere to go when their husbands died, and you know, women being given less importance than the son, and so they land up on the streets. And so they had all these people, whether they were prostitutes or widows or this and that, living with them, and they opened an institution where they had bag making and carpet making, this, that, and they earned a little money. They all lived in my grandparents' house. So every summer holidays, I used to go back to my grandfather's and grandmother's. My grandfather was a professor of physics and maths, and that's why I took maths when I went to uni. And they taught us that in the living room, we'd undo these little mattresses and sleep on them at night, and then roll them up in the day, and then we'd do prayers there, we'd eat on the floors there, and we'd bond with all these people who were trying to make their lives, and they opened up their homes to everyone. They lived literally not a very... they didn't have much money, because my grandmother was was working in the Samaj, or the institution. My grandfather was teaching as a professor. The two daughters were teaching, and one was... And now that institution is now a primary and secondary school as well. Wow. And it still has the different things where people work and sell their stuff. And also the road was named after my grandparents a few years ago. So they have done a lot. And all those people became family.
Right.
And we used to call them all auntie sons. So, you know, everyone was auntie or uncle. And we all had jobs. We all had to clean. We all had to cook. We all had to do everything. So I think it came from there that you start rescuing people. And so I went from there, I guess.
Do you feel that you can be an inspiration to other people, because you don't have to fit a stereotype, you don't have to fit a cookie cutter, you can break a mold, succeed,
I'd
be yourself.
I'd love to look like Beyoncé, but I'm not going to, am I?
I think I would. Wouldn't we all?
Well, I went to a concert, and it was quite interesting because her new lyrics are quite
edgy,
risque.
Yeah.
And my husband said he learned a whole new dictionary.
I can only imagine. Did you go to the recent concert?
Yeah.
Right.
And
okay.
It was it was interesting. It's a lovely concert. Very good show. As a lyricist, I'm not sure. But then there again, it's a whole new world.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because the kids were like, you know, doing the dancing and having a really good time like that. But they knew every word. And
it's very powerful. Which is why I think there's power.
Yeah.
To music in the writing, in the delivery, in the consumption.
And she is sending messages about her culture,
as
her
you
background,
have been.
Yeah, and where she comes from, and being, who she is and where she's got to. And I think that's amazing. It really is amazing.
And we think of love songs when people have had heartbreak. We think of how hip-hop was generated originally and their experiences in downtown L.A. or wherever it was. There's huge power and emotion and messaging to
it. It's great.
So with everything that's going on, everything that's got, what's next for you? What's the next journey chapter?
I'm releasing a new song now that's coming out, which is just a cover thing that reminds me of my childhood. So,
you've just shot the video, haven't you, Paul?
Yeah, I did yesterday.
Yep.
Yeah, I shot the video yesterday. Needless to say, all my videos have to have avatars and all this so they can disguise the fact that I'm, how should I put this? Closer to 100 than I am to zero.
How do you feel about that, though? Because again, it's about, we have to sell an image, but actually there's masking elements of the person behind the talent.
Because
is that okay?
Yeah, my best years, I think, was when I was, I was born on the 8th of August in 58, so it was 8858. And all my life, I was waiting as a kid to reach 8888.
Right.
And I was 30. So my 30th year was like my best year of my life because I was, it was that date I'd waited for. So I, in my 30s, I was also very happy. I was grounded. I was, everything was going right.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm still there. But chronologically, I've kind of doubled plus five, you know.
With so much wisdom and experience.
Yeah,
too.
And I think it's just, I still feel 50, I still 30. Feel 30. And 65 for me, I know people say age is just a number. It's not just a number. I just want you all to know that it is not a number because I didn't have these aches and pains when I was younger.
Tell me about
But in certain ways, it's mind over matter. I still run 10 kilometers every day.
Oh, and well, Anna, can I also say you helped me train as well? Do you remember when your husband and I were in the club championships and indeed won it? And now I think we're embarking on the next club championships. I'll be coming back to you for that. Is there a real standout message for people? Because this podcast is really now about the human-centered element of people trying to lead their life and live their best possible life in a world that is tough. What is there a real with everything you've experienced?
In my religion, which is not a religion, it's a way of life. Really, in Hinduism, we believe that we are made of the body, mind, intellect, and soul, or the Atman, and the body is the five senses. The mind is your likes, dislikes, so on. The intellect is your discrimination of good and bad, and if you can keep control of those, your Atman, your soul is free and happy. So if you can't discipline your body, your mind and your intellect, you're making it much harder for yourself. So start with getting your bodies and mind in shape and you'll be out there before you know it doing everything you want to do.
Maybe we're all work in progress.
Yeah, we are. I mean, I still think that, you know, there's so much more I have to do, but I think I've got time. So it's all a matter of just being a little bit positive. And I love my home life. I just love the farm. So,
And I love coming to visit you there as well. And playing a little bit of tennis, which is always an added.
You know, people like, I mean, your daughter, etc. If anyone wants to talk to me about anything or touch base with me about this, I have no problem with discussing anything. I think, as I said, as you get older, you accept yourself. And one of the main messages is don't try and be somebody else. And you know, people say, oh, love yourself. You don't have to accept something about you if you don't like it. If you're 100 pounds overweight, you don't like it. You don't have to embrace it. You can change it. I don't believe in embracing everything about you, good and bad. You can change the bad. If it doesn't suit you. But if it suits you, well, go ahead. No problem. I think everyone has different.
Take charge of your own destiny.
Yeah, but if there is something that you're not happy with, change it. But yes, love yourself. But first, you have to love yourself. You've got to be the person you want to be. And anyone can do that. You really can.
I want people to listen and watch this and just think this is a compelling human story. But in whatever we're trying to achieve, understand that human being element, as you say, that those components, that it's not just about achieving X or achieving Y. Enjoy the journey, for heaven's sake.
When you look at a baby's hands developing and then you see the person growing and you know, graduating and stuff like that. I mean, look how beautiful life is. I mean, even a flower and you see the bud and then you see the flower and how beautiful is life, you know? We just don't I just want everything to be beautiful now.
Well, I'm hopefully we've just created a beautiful episode. And I just want to say a huge thank you for taking the time to come into our great studio.
Have I gone too far now?
No, and just having a really vulnerable conversation. You know, thank you so
thank
much.
You.
I really appreciate
it.
And come back to us and tell us about your next number one song.
I will. Hope so.
As soon as it hits number one,
and when you win that tournament, I'll be watching.
We will do. Thanks so much. Take great care.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.